This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to take a view of the federal landscape, legislation, TSP, benefits, finance. And here to lead us is Mike Causey, senior correspondent. Fed News Radio?
That means oldest guy in the building, yes, senior correspondent.
Well,
correct.
We're one, too.
Glad to be here. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. John Elliott, Benefits Whiz, fellow seminar presenter, former Fed. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob.
And we're going to have a call from Tom Trabuco, Director of External Affairs, TSP, to keep us apprised of what's going on at the TSP. And my name is Bob Lines. I'm an accountant finance tax type, and hopefully I can add to the discussion. But Mike, what do you see on the proverbial landscape of legislation, good, bad, and otherwise?
Well, I was just thinking what a difference a year makes. 2009, and John, I think, would back me up because he's been watching it a long time, too, was the best year federal workers and retirees and former federal workers have ever had on Capitol Hill. You know, you can go through the laundry list of things that were part of the tobacco bill, that were part of the Defense Authorization Act, but they benefited people who are working, people who come back into government, people who want to transition out as part-timers. It was just a laundry list of things that I wouldn't have dreamt possible. They happened this year, not so much. We've had a lot of unforeseen problems that are taking Congress's attention away. I thought about who would have predicted the Gulf oil situation and the intensity of it, and we probably haven't seen anything yet. This is taking a lot of time as people try to connect the dots and point the finger at somebody else and blame them for it. The administration is talking about a 5% cut across the board in spending, in federal spending, even though that may not be permanent, and it may be spotty from agency to agency. It will have an impact on people. There was an almost near successful attempt to freeze federal pay for the year 2011. It missed by very few. It was a very close vote. We talked to Dan Adcock from the National Active and Retired Federal Employees and Randy Irwin from the National Federation of Federal Employees, and they both agreed on two things. One is the vote was too close for comfort. And the second is that they think there will be another effort to freeze federal pay for the year 2011. And, you know, maybe we can all talk about that, but it's interesting when you write a column directed at federal workers and you mention something like that, the people who are reading it tend to be federal workers, and they say that would be political suicide for a member of Congress to do that. And I think it might be political suicide if you represent if you're inside the Beltway member of Congress, but if you come from Iowa or Utah or Kansas or what have you, I would think freezing federal pay in that district would be a very popular thing. So I think it's a very real threat.
So if we balance the good last year, what good, you mentioned it was a banner year for feds pay-wise? Yeah.
Well, not so much pay-wise.
Not pay.
But more in the benefits, the retirement benefits area. There were a lot of positive changes, and then earlier in the year last year, the TSP changes, including what Tom Trabuco is going to talk about, is the Roth option that's coming in late 2011, I think, for the TSP. So, yeah, it wasn't pay, but it was
Well, didn't they
benefits.
Get a raise?
They got
a pay
raise, but that wasn't part of the overall package.
No, that's the annual raise, which is what generally always effective the first Sunday in January, first full pay period in January. And actually, that raise, as I recall, there have been bigger raises in the past than that. It was kind of low.
Yeah.
Last year, I think. Well,
two something.
I don't pay attention to pay anymore because I. I don't get pay anymore.
Yeah, no, pay is not a Capitol Hill issue, really. They have a peripheral advantage. Now, what we were talking about was the tobacco bill, and which gave you the Roth IRA option in the TSP, and then the defense authorization bill. I mean, I can tick them off. If you're a FERS employee, it made it possible, if you left the government and took your money out, to when you return to government, as many people have, to repay that money. Before that, you couldn't do it. And that's a big deal, because an awful lot of Clinton administration people were just waiting 8 years for the restoration, and many of them came back into government when President Obama was elected. So otherwise, that 2, 4, 6, 8 years they had under President Clinton would have been wasted had they taken their money out. And so that was a big deal.
We're talking about that withholding from their salary. It's not the TSP, right?
It's retirement.
Yeah. Automatic retirement contributions that come out of your pay currently. It's 0.8% for FERS, and that's what we're talking about. So,
well, that's one of the things too. The CSRS CSRS people made it possible for them to transition out by going part time and not having their annuities reduced because of the high three. There was one that lets people come back into government, retired annuitants come back into government, and at the agency option, they can work a part-time or a fixed number of hours and get both their full federal salary and their full annuity. And it was just a laundry list of coming and going things like that.
Did that extend to the military retirees? Do you know?
Well, they've always had a different dual compensation thing. It gets very complicated if you're a regular versus if you're a reservist, and most people are reservists. But bottom line, I don't know the answer to that. But I think the military was taken care of some time ago.
Okay, because I had a couple clients, and they felt compelled to come back to do the world good.
Yeah,
but they lost their military pension.
Yeah, there is a dual compensation thing. They may have been regulars, or
they were regulars.
And the other thing too, you know, every time we talk about these things, everything we say, there should be a big asterisk by it, because there's always an exception to something. And in the case of this dual compensation, the waiver of the dual compensation, defense has been able to do it for years. As part of the national security thing. So this really extends it to other federal agencies.
Okay, and also, excuse me, they can come back to work part-time, which I've found, a number of people that I work with, they don't want to come back full-time, but they like this part-time, and they make a really decent compensation package, and they're able to work in retirement part-time and maybe not have the same stress level. They don't have the same stress level, and this was a good thing.
Yeah, I think that everybody's ideal, the perfect ideal work is to work about 3 days a week, you know, and have fun.
FERS people never had this issue, but the CSRS, the October legislation, corrected a flaw in the Part-Time Computation Act that effectively prevented CSRS employees from going part-time late in their careers, in other words, their high three period, and that was cleaned up. And now CSRS people, as well as FERS, who always could do that without penalty or fear of annuity reduction, rather than retire, could, if they'd stick around by going part-time, you know, picture somebody says, you know, I'm going to retire, I'm just sick of this, I'm sick of the commute, I'm whatever I'm sick of. But, you know, if I could work out a deal with my agency where I could work 2 or 3 days a week, whatever works for me, I'll stick around longer. And now CSRS people can do that effective October 28th of last year, currently, and forevermore. They can now do that without fear of annuity reduction. And why that is because even though you're getting a part-time salary, your high three will be based on the deemed full-time rate of the job. That's the key. So bottom line is the CSRS as well as the FERS can go a part-time schedule without getting hurt. And we'll see how that plays out, whether more and more people are taking advantage of that. My prediction, which is kind of tenuous, but you know this traffic nightmare that's expected to occur in the fall of 2011 along 395 and probably affect other paths of commuting.
Was that the BRAC thing?
Oh, yeah. And that building that's gone up on 395 near Seminary Road, that may cause a lot of retirements in and of itself. And it may, but it may cause some people to say, "Well, it is so bad commuting that if I could handle it just 2 or 3 days a week, I could handle it. But I can't handle it anymore 5 days a week." So we'll see how that plays out. That was one of the most boneheaded decisions ever, by the way. I may not ever be able to get to the radio station again after that.
Well, we'll have to...
we can telework.
Yeah, telework or put you up at a hotel so you can commute Sunday night. One of the things that came out late in the year from my perspective, tax-wise, the voluntary contribution, the folks at OPM was kind enough to make a ruling to say that you could transfer the VC, voluntary contribution, directly to a Roth, whereas before it wasn't sure, and you would have to first go to a traditional and then to a Roth. So that was pretty powerful.
That wasn't really a change, though, was it?
It wasn't just, certain.
They just didn't. They were kind of wrong, as it turns out.
Let's say they were on the fence, but they came off the fence after looking at it and said, "Nah, you can do it." Because it's tax law, and tax law is like an oak tree.
Yeah,
you just gotta follow all the roots down and eventually get to the source.
Yeah.
So that was a neat thing. But,
and, you know, I bet most of our listeners don't know what the voluntary contributions is, because many people confuse it with the thrift savings plan.
Yeah, it's totally different. It's really, and it's just for CSRS and CSRS offset.
First, correct.
Need not listen to this. And they can voluntarily contribute up to 10% of their federal lifetime earnings. Huge amount. If they have it.
Yeah, if you hit the lottery, seriously.
Or if anything less.
Yeah.
So it's not, it has to be 10%. That's the max, which is pretty huge. And they can put that money in. It earns a decent rate of interest, 3+%.
Well, and currently it's in the 3% range.
Yeah. You can't do that anywhere else.
I mean, almost 4%. 3.75, I think. But whatever it is.
The end game is to get it into an IRA, preferably a Roth IRA. Or you can leave it in and get a greater annuity. It's kind of your choice. But with the advent of the Roth IRA, it provided a different avenue than what maybe it was used before. And so it's really, we have a whole show on this, March 1st, 2010.
Yeah,
and I would urge the listeners, if they're uncertain about it, to listen to that. But Mike, good entree. Fabulous deal for those.
Yeah, well, I learned firsthand through my wife, who retired under CSRS and did this exact same thing. So I'm not only familiar with what you can do, but how you do it, how you accomplish that. So, it worked for us. The only hard part was, and it wasn't that hard, you have to, and if you read the form TSP-60, where you're, you have to transfer the non-taxable part of your IRA out
To the TSP.
To the TSP, which we had to do.
To provide a smooth glide path to the Roth.
Yeah, because that's going to sound confusing. She had a conventional, it still does, a conventional IRA, and we wanted to do the Roth. But first, per your advice, as the tax expert, we had to extract the non-taxable portion out and put it that in the TSP.
The taxable portion.
The taxable. Yeah. I misspoke, yeah. See how confusing this is? And then we were able to open up the Roth with her voluntary contribution account. And all that...
Tax-free? You
know, tax-free. So...
Nice.
It's... it was accomplished. Right. And...
I was listening to you last week couple times because they re-aired it, and let's get back to this 5% budget cut. And like you say, it's going to be aimed at different places rather than a shotgun approach to hit everybody.
And it could be a little different from past years, because in the past, and one speaking of Senator Roth of the Roth IRA fame, he implemented a freeze or something on government hiring and government spending back when the Republicans were in majority many, many years ago. And they said it's going to be government-wide, it's absolute. And then within a week, they'd exempted the Defense Department, which was half the government right there. And then they exempted the Postal Service. And they exempted VA and I think the IRS. And it got down to where the people that were left frozen were, I think, the American Battle Monuments Commission and, you know, the Marine Mammal Commission, that sort of thing. This one's going to be a little bit different from that because he's ordered a 5% spending cut or across the board, federal agencies are hiring, you know, because of the TARP program and a number of other things and national defense, national security. A number of federal agencies are hiring. They are identifying what they call inherently governmental jobs, which has been a debatable term for 30 years. But they're identifying those jobs that are being handled by contractors, and they're going to move them back into government. But the point is, it seems to me, in a number of agencies, this 5% reduction won't be accomplished by freezing hiring or reduce hiring because they're going to be bringing more people in. So, and I don't know how much of this is a paper exercise and a paper exchange, but it would seem to me that the areas they're going to have to hit hardest are training and travel, which are usually the first victims.
Yeah. So if your budget was X, including payroll, travel, training, and other, and you took 5% of X, then that 5% has got to come off of the non-salaried side.
Got to come somewhere. That's right. And at a time when you're actually adding people to further complicate it. So I'm glad that I don't understand this. I'm glad I'm not in that line of work. But it's going to be, a different kind of reduction than we've seen in the past.
Are there exemptions to it?
I don't know. I assume there probably are already, and I assume when agencies come in and make the case, there'll be exemptions. You know, again, what if Homeland Security said we can't do it and protect the country? What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
You're going to be exempted.
Yeah.
Well, did you ever hear the term Washington Monument cut?
No.
I wish I'd invented it. I don't know who
did. Is that a game, a poker game?
It is. Okay. Yes, it is. It's between federal agencies and the Congress, and what happens is, they'll say the Interior Department. Congress cuts Interior 10%. And Interior says, we really can't make it with that. And they said, well, you're going to have to. Okay, then what you do is you wait until spring when all the tourists are in town, all the school kids from various parts of the world beyond the Beltway, and you shut down the Washington Monument. The one thing they want to see, you shut down whatever you have jurisdiction to. You shut down a national park or something.
It's like liar's poker.
Yeah, but it's called Washington Monument cut. And then the constituents go to Congress and say, you know, Bobby saved up for 4 years at high school to come on his senior trip, and now he can't see the monument, can't go into the Jefferson Memorial, can't do these things. And then Congress resents. That's the way it's supposed to work out. But we could see something like that happening.
The IRS cut.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I don't think so, huh?
Wow. All right, what else? That caught my attention in listening to the show and reading your column. I go, oh, my goodness, because we're in training.
Yeah.
We've always been kind of a protected environment because it was pre-retirement and mid-career, and it was an incentive to either move people out if they were looking to move people out or have people more pleased with their working life because of the benefits they were getting, but they were unaware of.
You know, again, it depends on how strategic, how long a view you want to take of this. I mean, if you've got to deal with an immediate problem, it doesn't matter what your workload requirements are going to be 20 years down the road. You've got to deal with now. But I have always thought, and particularly with this new generation of people coming in, and I hear experts all the time on this radio station saying the government must do more. It must make them feel more comfortable. It must make them feel wanted and welcomed. It must give them more training. It must promise them a fast track. And it's as if you're doing them a favor to give them a job. But I would think if that's the situation, if that's the case, if that's this new, the millennials or whatever they call this generation, then the best thing they could do would be call in a firm like yours, have somebody like you and like John and like Tammy Flanagan come in their first year of employment and say, you know, this TSP is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and the government's giving you a 5% match, kiddo, 5% tax deferred pay raise. And if you hang on, even if you don't like your job, you can change jobs, but stay in government and build up this tremendous annuity because federal retirees are in as good a shape as anybody in the country right now with a guaranteed annuity.
Including FERS. You know, FERS,
absolutely.
People always feel they got left. They did not.
No, they did not. Most people in the private sector would kill to have the FERS. But the bottom line is training may be impacted by this, but if I were the agencies and I was worried about this future generation, not only getting them, but keeping them on the job. I would do this benefits seminar that you guys do. I think now it's usually when they're within 5 years of retirement, the agencies
that
are seeing.
Seems to be the bulk. Yeah,
that's the way they advertise it, but I see more and more 20-year-olds and early 30-year-olds in the retirement class.
Well, they're smart people then.
And I go up, and some of the other speakers have said the same thing. I'll go up at the break and not saying, what are you doing here? I said, why are you here? Mm-hmm. And almost to the person is, I want to know now, and I don't want to make the same mistakes, and I don't want to be here 5 years from retirement when I can't do much.
Well, then they're smart, and the agencies are good to let them in. I thought they sort of rationed it and limited.
Well, they do for the most part. So it is unfortunately kind of rare to see.
We do a mid career seminar, mm-hmm. and it's fairly well attended. And we do a beginning career. It doesn't rival the pre retirement whatsoever.
Even the mid career, they are older. They're not what Mike is talking about. And I did a few at patent office. They were 2-hour seminars. And, of course, virtually the only thing they cared about was the TSP. So I led off with that. I mean, even before I did my first one, I said, I know what they're going to be most interested in, the TSP. And sure enough, that was true. And so I led off with that. And got a lot of questions about the TSP, but when I went into other things, and some about health insurance, because health insurance is important for everybody. But once I got much beyond that, they just tuned out. They weren't interested in anything about the FERS annuity or Social Security, because I think a lot of people mistakenly think Social Security won't be around for them, but it will in some form. It's going to have to change. But, you're absolutely right. I mean, they should be getting the word about the miracle of compounding interest. And a lot of people, most people don't understand that, because most people come out of school, like most of us did, with no knowledge of financial matters and how money works for you. So they're coming in and fairly ignorant about these things. And what we can do is educate them and start them on the right path and show them examples. If you postpone your saving and investing in the TSP, our equivalent of the 401k in the private sector, you can end up with far, far less money at retirement. And I've constructed some examples that show that vividly. I've shown that to my children too. My son just started with the IMF, so I assume he's going to have some sort of 401k for a while anyway. It's a year contract, but
great.
So, yeah, they need to be educated. You're absolutely right.
Well, you're talking about the FERS employees feeling put upon by this retirement system. They get a 5% match from the government, 5% tax-deferred pay raise if they put in 5% of their own money. And I was talking to my youngest daughter last night, and at her job, they put in 4%, which is almost unheard of in the private sector. When I worked at the Washington Post, we got 3% and then 4% match. I've never worked anywhere since that gave any match to the TSP. So it's a big deal.
That was a great lead-in, because Tom Trabuco, Director of External Affairs at the TSP, is on the phone. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, Bob.
Boy, great to have you. Mike is here, and John, and we're like the RCA dog. Wait to hear the good news from you.
Well, the good news was certainly not the May returns, so maybe we'll
skip that
and perhaps follow up on some of those changes that you were talking about with regard to the TSP and what I know that Mike regards as the high point, the high of benefit years for civil servants on Capitol Hill 2009, which indeed was a banner year. As you know, we have we had 5 major changes that were put into law last year that we have been implementing this year, and we're happy to have a slow year this year because we're busy. We've got a fair amount going on here. The first order of business, of course, was putting in the immediate employer contributions which was a hole in our program right from the very beginning, where when new employees were hired, they had to wait 6 to 12 months, first of all, in order to contribute, and then we got that changed, but then second of all, in order to pick up the employer contributions, both the matching and the agency automatic 1% contributions. So we put those into place last July, and we had an immediate bump in participation. It was actually excellent. We followed it up with a mailing that went out asking people, "What are you waiting for now?" And that mailing provided us with an 11% positive return. In other words, we sent it out to about 400,000 participants who were not contributing, and 4,000 to 5,000 participants said, "Ah, well, maybe I should contribute now," and they began contributing.
That's to me very interesting, because on the other side of life, on private industry, the tax laws allow the private industry employers not to have to do it, like you say, for 6 to 12 months. And they're happy not to match it because it's an expense to them. But here you got the feds reversing the trend and saying, no, we're going to do it from the get-go to make you more happy that you work for Uncle.
That's right. And, you know, if you think about it, the evolution of the thing is all sensible, that when the TSP started, and I know this because I worked on the committee on Capitol Hill that was responsible for it, the thought was there are a lot of people who, when they sign on with the government, don't stay. You know, you have a year when you're not protected. You have 3 years career conditional, and there is a fair amount of turnover in those early years of employment. And they thought, why create, you know, problems for short-term employees, small amounts of money, that type of thing. But as this notion of the defined contribution plan caught on and people realized it's really a lifetime savings program, regardless of who your employer is, it is how retirement has trended for the last 25 to 30 years with these individual accounts and their portability. Well, it's best to get those dollars in as early as possible and help get the employee on the saving pattern that will carry them through retirement.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, the portability, because somebody entering the federal workforce and maybe was with an employer in the past and had a 401k, if I'm not mistaken, you can bring in that, generally speaking, in full into the TSP. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And that's one of the big benefits that we view for the uniformed services members out there. In other respects, the program, we need to do some things to make it more attractive to uniformed services. For instance, there have been calls for matching contributions, for instance, for the uniformed services. The Roth is a big feature for the uniformed services, and we can talk about why that is. But the other aspect for members of the uniformed services is that if you start a TSP account while you're a young member in uniform, and you keep it, you can use that as the repository of your retirement savings for the rest of your career. You'll probably go on to work, I've seen some numbers lately, you know, 8 to 12 employers over the course of a year, or I'm sorry, over the course of a career, that you can, each time you leave one of those employers, you have the option to remove your funds from their 401k account and put them in your own repository. The TSP has turned out to be a very good place in order to collect those funds because of its low costs primarily, but also because we've got a good diversified investment choices, as well as the life cycle funds that are essentially free to you because they're the same cost as the underlying funds.
Yeah, and on the reverse of that, heavens forbid, but if somebody leaves the federal sector to go to the private, you can still leave your money in the TSP, although I think there's a minimum balance, isn't there?
Well, we've really knocked that minimum balance down, Bob. I think it's about $200 now. So there are very few folks who are forced out of the TSP. We just thought it made more sense to be a welcoming kind of a plan rather than one that's trying to push people out. And, you know, I know for others that might not be their philosophy. And indeed, the whole concept of the IRA, when it was set up, that was designed to be a repository for various 401k plans. So there's been a bit of back and forth and evolution in the design of these things.
You know, you mentioned the portability issue is the reason for the TSP and the FERS program. The General Accounting Office, its former name, years ago did a study, and I believe they said that something like 74% of the people who raise their right hand are sworn in as government employees do not retire from the federal government. So it's a relatively small number of people who are lifers, you know, who go in and stay in and retire from the government. And before this FERS retirement system, if you had the civil service retirement system program, it was kind of like the golden handcuffs. After you've been in a while, you felt that you almost had to stay and you were compelled. But with the new economy, and as you said, Tom, 8 to 12 employers during a career lifetime, most people who are going to work at government today probably won't retire from the government.
Yeah, exactly right there, Mike, and you and I, and I know that Bob also, Bob Elliott and Bob Hines, will recall that that is something Senator Stevens kept saying as he was pushing for the creation of what became the TSP, the defined contribution element of the FERS program.
Yeah, the whole FERS system, it was designed in 1986 to be portable by Congress, not just including the TSP, which we've just talked about, but also the FERS annuity contributions. You could take those out at any time after you left, and they'd pay you interest on them. Unlike CSRS, they'd never, and still don't, pay you interest if you take your CSRS contributions out. And if you had 5 years when you left under FERS and you left your contributions in, you could get an annuity at 62. So, and then Social Security, of course, is portable, as we know, from job to job. So the FERS system is and was intended to be totally portable with the idea that people would feel free now, unlike under the old CSRS system that I graduated under, to move in and out of government without losing their retirement benefits.
All righty, Tom. So what else is on the TSP hot stove?
Well, let's see. Coming up, our big thing coming up, Bob, is the automatic enrollment. That is the program under which we will, beginning in August, when a new employee comes on. This will not reach back to employees who are already on the rolls, but it will just affect new employees. They will automatically be signed up for the TSP at a 3% contribution rate. The 3% contribution rate has been chosen because that's what generates the dollar-for-dollar match under the FERS matching arrangement. And I should say this does not apply to the uniformed services, and, of course, we have no new employees, new hires who are coming on as CSRS. So this is just the FERS folks. So they'll be signed up for the 3%. That'll come out of their paycheck. They'll pick up 3% matching from their employing agency, as well as 1% agency automatic. Their funds will be invested in the G fund. And what this does is make inertia work in favor of participating in the TSP. And so to the extent that people aren't really going to make a decision, this makes the decision in favor of contributing. If they decide not that they don't want to do that, they have 90 days to say, no, forget it, back it out, send me back my money, you keep your money, I don't want to participate in this. So that will be a very big undertaking for not only us, but the employing agencies, because it's a change to their payroll and personnel systems that are going into place. They'll be explaining this through their personnel offices, as well as implementing it through their payroll systems.
Is this up and running?
No, this will be August. August, that's right. But it is the big thing on the horizon for us. Later this year, we will be finalizing our program for spouse beneficiaries. And this is a change that I'm very pleased with personally. It was suggested by members of our Employee Thrift Advisory Council, and that's the group of employee unions and associations representing everyone from blue-collar workers up to senior executives in government. We have a group of 15 individuals who come together periodically to make recommendations to the board. One of their recommendations was to allow spouses to inherit the TSP account of an individual who dies. Up until now, when a TSP participant dies, the participant designates the beneficiary. If there's no beneficiary designation, it is the surviving spouse in what's called the order of precedence that applies to all retirement benefits in the federal government. And those folks received the account balance. It was sent to them, or if they were a surviving spouse, it could be sent to their designated financial institution in order to keep those amounts, maintain their pre-tax status. This legislation, once it was enacted last year, we put in place an interim plan that allowed those surviving spouses to simply leave their funds on account and invest it in the G fund, so that they couldn't lose any money in it. As Mike likes to say, the G fund never has a bad day. And keep them there until we put in place a permanent spouse beneficiary program. That will be going into place by the end of this year. And once that is in place, those surviving spouse beneficiaries will be able to manage their accounts as well and invest in all of the TSP investment funds.
Can a surviving spouse who also is a Fed take the spouse's funds that passed and put it into his or her account?
Yes. We have always been able to do that because that's just viewed as a transfer, and the tax law does permit transfers of spousal surviving spouse accounts and the preservation of that as a pre-tax account balance. So yes, that has been available for many years, and we have an awful lot of married couples in the federal sector, and they take advantage of that.
Sure. Tom, what are the account balances looking like now? Because I know you have some million-dollar accounts, and a lot of these were people who transferred money in from a private sector job or for a private sector plan. But you also have some people who are well over half a million now, don't you?
That's right. I don't have the numbers right here with me, Mike. You know, I periodically at your request,
right,
we take a look at them, and I know we were both kind of surprised when we saw how many there were. I think there were 76 accounts that were over $1 million. But then as we cut back on that and said, okay, how many over $900,000, how many over $800,000, we got down around $500,000 or $600,000, and there were thousands.
Yeah, substantial number. Very impressive, yeah.
That's right. And these are the folks who have continued through good times and bad times to put in their funds, to pick up the matching funds, and to make those long-term investment choices that pay off over the long haul.
Well, I think that's a key word you just said, because when you look at the average account balance in the federal thrift savings plan versus the average account balance in outside 401k plans, the feds are about $10,000 to $12,000 ahead on average. And your immediate reaction is, well, they're smarter and they're investing better. But the real secret, I think, is that 5% government match.
That's right. And no matter how you look at it, that's if you don't pick that up, you're leaving money on the table. Mm. And feds understand that. I'll tell you the one group that I always look to as kind of a bellwether on this, and that's the letter carriers.
Yeah.
These are the folks who negotiate their pay and benefits. They work with Congress as well to make sure that they get the benefits that are offered to other federal employees, non-postal employees. So they are out there actively as a group representing their employees very, very effectively. And when I talked last to the letter carriers about their participation rate, now remember, these are folks who are in a big industrial operation, basically inside the government, comparable in some ways to blue collar employees in a big industrial operation in the private sector. They had a 95 participation rate at above 5%, meaning that 95% of letter carriers were contributing more than 5% to the TSP and picking up all those matching contributions.
That's astounding. And you know what that shows too is the postal unions, I guess, in particular the letter carriers, from day one signed onto this TSP and they got on your board and they told their members, they said things you can't do. You know, you could encourage people to join it, but Congress wouldn't let you sell it all that well. But the letter carriers didn't have to do that. They said, if you don't join it, you're an idiot.
That's right. This is an organization, the Letter Carriers Union, and the other unions as well, that exists solely for, they're well known by the employees whom they represent and who are their members, and that there's a great deal of trust there. And when they say it, it's different than a federal agency saying, hey, this is a good benefit mm-hmm. for you. And they can speak bluntly, as we all
yes.
know they do.
Yes, absolutely.
So what's the deal with Roth? I mean, every seminar I go, when's the Roth? And you know, is it? I'm not going to ask you if it's a good deal or not, but that's the next question after that. But I'd imagine the work that you'll have to do to make that switch work perfectly when you switch it is
that's
going to take some time.
That's right. That is the long pole in the tent, Bob, and we've known that since day one, and Congress understood that when they were looking at authorizing it for us. That's why we have the time that we do have and that we in fact need in order to implement it. Our plan is to implement Roth at the end of 2011 to allow people to elect it, and then in January of 2012 those elections will take effect and the Roth feature will effectively open up in the TSP. Just a little rundown on what the Roth 401k is. It is essentially an after-tax account of retirement savings. These are funds that are taxed when you earn them, and after those taxes are removed, the remaining amount is sent forward for investment, and it can accumulate earnings again over a lifetime, presumably. And at the end of that time, all of the funds in the account can be withdrawn free of federal income tax. This is something that for people who are in a low tax rate right now would probably make sense for them to look at once it is available. The largest group that we've got, of course, are the members of the uniformed services, where we've now got approaching 700,000 members, TSP participants from the uniformed services, whose tax rates are relatively low because their income is relatively low. Additionally, in many cases, uniformed services members are serving in combat zones where they are not subject to federal income tax on their earnings. So these are folks for whom the Roth feature might make a great deal of sense.
Now, the military people, their participation rate is astoundingly high, I would think.
You know, it's a mixed bag. I think we're approaching 60% in the Navy, which for an unmatched program is truly phenomenal. Mm-hmm. That is an outstanding participation rate. Whereas in the Army, let's see, the last time I checked, we were down around 26, 27, 28%, somewhere in that area. So it is a mixed bag out there.
And the Navy, part of it by virtue of the fact that a lot of the people are out on a ship, but the Navy has had a tradition of taking care of the troops and having seminars and sessions and where you can get them all together. Whereas if you're in a unit in Afghanistan or Iraq out on patrol, it's not as likely that you're going to get these instructions and guidance and tell Alexis from back home.
That's right, and it is you can be distracted while you're there on the ground. I know that we've had a couple of young people here on the board staff who have gone over in their capacity as reservists and guardsmen, both to Iraq and to Afghanistan, and they have been very popular while they're over there because it's discovered that they work here and that they know about the program, and they find themselves doing training sessions over there. We just had one young man here who's a reservist who did 30 days at sea, and he did 30 trainings while he was out there.
Good for him.
We occasionally get emails from the war zones. Not many, but occasionally you get them. And then we don't even know where a lot of the emails come from, but these were clear where they were from. So they were listening to the show, I guess.
Well, here at WFED, we get quite a bit of traffic from Kuwait. We get a lot from Germany as well, but both places where there, lots of American service people. So they're out there and they're really hungry for knowledge. That's right. If I can see where they find out you're with the TSP, and boom, you're taking off certain duties. And
that's right.
All righty, Tom. What else?
So let's,
as if that's not enough.
I think that's enough. Oh, in terms of legislation, this year pending, I should mention H.R. 4865. That's a bill that's been introduced in the House of Representatives, bipartisan introduction by Congressman Lynch from Massachusetts and Congressman Chaffetz from Utah, to allow employees to contribute to the TSP from their lump sum terminal leave payments. This is the amount of leave that is unused at the end when you separate from service. Either.
That is annual leave, because I get questions that people think it applies to sick leave as well, and it doesn't.
That's right, Bob. You're absolutely right, and that is a key distinction, because the federal government does not make payments for unused sick leave. You can add it to your length of service.
Yeah, but we need to make that clear. It's the proposal is for the annual leave only.
Right.
And he also is subject to those IRS maximums, correct, for the year?
That's correct, yeah. It doesn't raise any of the limits, so all of this has to be done within the IRS limit of $16,500 a year for regular contributions and $5,500 for folks over age 50 and over. That's the maximum amount of contribution one can make. We have run into a bit of a bump in the road on this legislation. The Congressional Budget Office took a look at it and put a price tag of $317 million over the next 10 years on it. So under congressional budgeting rules, those costs have to be offset in order to move the legislation under normal procedures. So folks are looking at how that can be accomplished right now.
I was going to say that is really a nice deal, especially for somebody going out at the end of a calendar year, early part of the next year. They could have effectively knock out their accumulated leave from tax by putting it into the TSP.
That's right.
Wow.
And it is kind of found money at that point in your career as well. So it is a good deal. It does not generate any matching contributions as well. We should make note of that. But still, it gives you a nice tax break and a little boost there as you're heading out the door.
All righty, Tom. Great having you.
Okay, well, happy to visit with you, gentlemen. And as always, it was a very interesting show when I was listening to it before I called in. And thank you for all the work that you do in getting this information out there and to the end of the row.
Well, it's fun.
Okay.
Thanks again.
You know, that savings he was talking about, the CBO that they're going to have to make somewhere or other, that's really... The government's going to get the money. It's just it delays when the taxes come in. That's the revenue loss to the Treasury there. So, and that's not a huge amount of money over a 10-year period. But we shall see. Pay cuts coming at the TSP.
Tom's going to call back after that. Wow. I love listening to him.
Well, this is a very unusual situation where you've got to, he's a spokesman for the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. That's its real title. We keep calling it the TSP. He's a spokesman for it, but he worked on the Hill. I knew him back when he worked on the Hill, but he worked on setting this program up, and he worked on setting up the FERS retirement program. I mean, he's one of the staff people that I would frequently deal with, and then later on he went over to NARF and worked with some of the unions too. But, I mean, he literally was present at the creation, and when he was talking to Senator Ted Stevens at the time about why we need this and what to do, and he saw all of the horse trading that went on. So it was amazing perspective.
There was a group at OPM with in the change from not CSRS to FERS, but the introduction of FERS. It wasn't a huge group, and most of them, fortunately, are still around, and some of them have gone on to, you know, great things. Linda Harris, Joe Richardson.
She wasn't part of that group.
She wasn't?
No, not that I don't think so. But I could be wrong.
Yeah.
She was in training at OPM, the training function at OPM. But Richardson, was.
He was very smart, and there was another guy, Jamie Cowan. And anyway, I'm giving a commercial for GRB, but they certainly did do great things.
Well, you do find
it in
government.
I knew most of the people in that group, and it was a very small group. So, at OPM, and because I was chief of advisory services at the time, and of course we were dealing with the agencies and getting the information out about FERS, and that was an exciting time.
Anyway, it's just interesting what that group did with their knowledge base. All righty, we got about, 45 seconds, Dorothy? 1 minute. Whoa. Okay, final comments?
Things are never as bad as they seem in this 5% cut for federal agencies. This too shall pass. We'll survive it.
Okay, good. And you can guarantee there won't be any training cuts?
No.
For us.
No. 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 You guys are toast.
Well, it's been great knowing you. Even better having you on the show today.
Great. Thank. Glad to do it.
All right, John?
Happy Flag Day.
Is today Flag Day?
Today is Flag Day, yes.
Okay, well, we'll celebrate at lunch. And me, tax-wise, I understand there's 17 new 1099 forms for 2010.
Oh, good.
A lot of it driven by the health care changes in like 17. Anyway, great.
Great for you, huh?
Yeah. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned every weekday from 6